Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and on today's Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about performance tips for non-actors. You know, we've all seen professional actors at this point playing D&D, and we might be a little intimidated. So what are some simple tips for interesting character performance that us non-actors can do? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into the discussion, I'll remind everyone that at the end of the show, as always, we will have our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our private Discord server, which is available to all of our patrons. So if you would like to join in that chat, you can. It's very easy. Go visit our Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingdms. Pledge at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server, and you can join us at a little bit after 2 p.m. Eastern for our live after-party chat.
We would love to see you there. And, you know, on that point, big thanks to one of our patrons, Ash, who gave us the idea a while back for this episode, actually on Discord as part of a prior conversation. So we have long memories. Even if you gave us an idea from a relatively long time ago, we might pull it up when you least expect it. So thanks to Ash for the idea of performance tips for non-actors. And that's on some of our minds this week. With various performance type activities. So,
Dan, before we talk about specific advice, why don't you and I just share with each other, which I don't know that we ever have, what our actual acting backgrounds are. What kind of experience do you have in non-role play acting, if any?
Oh, well, the non-role play acting was a real curveball for Dan here. here's what I was going to say. Well, I've played a lot of D&D. Yeah. I took like a couple weeks of an acting class in college. I did student film classes, as a kid, frankly, student directed, stuff all through grammar school and high school and stuff like that. Oh God, this is uncorking. Oh my God. regret that you asked me that, Paul. So I was in the habit of developing and creating and, you know, all kinds of stuff with my close friends. And I thought that performance and acting and creating was simply the best. And so I went to college, and my very first semester was like, they have a theater department. They have actual acting and directing classes. This is the best thing ever. And I signed up for an acting class. And I got in there, and this was, for what it's worth, the University of Maine. And, you know, if you have really big dreams about being an actor or director or something like that, you probably ought to be in New York or Los Angeles. And if you have decided on a different path, and wound up at a very distant from anything in the entire world, as far as you can possibly get, at the far end of the country, at the University of Maine, you might have possibly a chip on your shoulder. I don't know. That's kind of my analysis of this. So the faculty in a department that's very, very, very far away from where you kind of hope to be might possibly have a chip on your shoulder. And so I got in this college acting class, and the very first day, the head acting instructor in the department said, "I know why you're here. I know why you're here. You are all seniors and you need an art credit because you've gone the entire 4 years and you haven't got your required art credit. And that is great. I am so glad that you waited until the last possible semester to sign up for this class because that means that I can make you do anything that I want and you have no recourse and you cannot drop the class."
Wow, that's intense, Dan. I had no idea.
Yeah, I've never told you that. I have a whole this is a whole thing that I had to work through, Paul. And And I, you know, I worked up the first monologue, and you know, to be perfectly honest, that instructor really did make people cry, like, you know, not in the scene.
Wow.
Like people ran from the room weeping uncontrollably based on things that that she did. And I withdrew about a month in. I said, this is not the situation I'm in. I actually can withdraw. I thought that acting should have been obviously the best thing in the entire world. It should be clear, but there's so much joy and there's so many things you can do and there's so much creativity. And I've just had such a good time my whole life with it. And I thought this is clearly the best thing. How can you spend time making this shitty? What the hell?
Oh my goodness. That is hilarious, Dan. I had no idea.
I can't believe I
ruined acting for you. That's so funny.
What about you, Paul?
I am no stranger to the stage, though formal training has been minimal. For those who don't know, an odd random fact about me is that my parents are magicians. And so growing up, getting up on stage and helping them in their act or talking about their act and how they, you know, how one presents oneself to a crowd is just normal. It's just part of growing up for me. And then in high school, by the time I got into high school, I did do a fair amount of drama, musical theater, et cetera, to the point where when I was looking at colleges, that was one of two major important parts for me.
Really?
Was looking at what is their theater department like. Yeah. And I was definitely judging colleges based on the writing curriculum and the theater department. And the odd thing is I did that all the way up until the summer after high school. And by the time I got into college, it just faded away. I can't say that I made any kind of conscious decision to not pursue acting, but it was always in the back of my head that was of interest to me. And then I just didn't. Other interests bubbled to the top, and theater took a back seat and eventually became not a thing I did anymore.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that about you. That's bad. I had no idea, Paul. What? How does this?
There you go.
I'm going to thank Ash again for this topic because I'm finding out stuff that we had no idea about our history at that stage of life. Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing,
so
Paul,
interesting.
Is that my family is diametrically opposite. No one in my family does anything performative like that whatsoever. And it's very alien, and it's frankly difficult to talk about with my other family members, and they very much keep it at arm's length and seems like weird and alien and embarrassing. So that's a very yin yang direction that we the two of us come at it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. But there's, you know, so the interesting thing, I think, is that both you and I, Dan, have clearly thought a lot about acting. And it's something that, and then obviously, like, I left out the role play, because obviously the role play, obviously we have been role playing for a very long time and incorporate all of the things that we've learned about acting over the years into that, I'm sure. But you know, I think it's interesting that, like, you know, I would say that our experiences, to me, strike me as largely kind of amateur, right? That, like, you know, scholastic, perhaps, at best. And so that's, you know, I think we will have some interesting perspectives about how, you know, it's not zero, right? It's not zero. And I know some people are coming from there, and that's, you know, possibly folks looking for this video are coming from there. Don't take this as me saying, like, you know, you have to have had some experience in your childhood or in your past in acting. Absolutely not. But certainly that's going to color our discussion, I think, some of our experiences. I mean, the fascinating thing is, when I think back on my background, yes, I was in several musicals and plays throughout high school. But probably more, it was more a case of my hobby of role playing fed those activities than the other way around. And I would say more impactful is perhaps actually, frankly, growing up with magicians in the house, because they were always practicing a fairly technical skill, right? They were practicing sleight of hands and tricks and whatnot. But a secondary conversation was always, what is the patter, right? What is the story or the words that I'm talking about? What am I saying to the audience while I do these things? And often the goal is to bring attention away from the technical activity going on, right? You know, maybe there's some sleight of hand that you don't want the audience to know, so that you're coming up intentionally with story and you know, speech to say to draw attention away from what's going on, you know, with your hands, let's say. Which I think is very interesting, because that kind of feels to me more similar to role play, right? Where you're doing something highly technical, but also incorporating some amount of storytelling, acting, what have you, into what you're doing.
That's great. That's great. That's so fascinating. So tell me, in that kind of act, how much is like pre-scripted versus improvised?
I'd say it's largely pre-scripted.
Really? Okay. All right.
Yeah. Or at least practiced, right? Like I don't remember them ever sitting down and like writing out a script, but they would practice over and over again. What should I say? What's the story of this trick? What should I, you know, how does this sound? Or can I, you know, how do I fill a little more time here, right? How do I keep the audience engaged while I have to do these things? And so maybe you add a little extra story or background to the thing you're talking about. But of course, also, and another thing is that you're highly conscious of body movement. And I don't know, I'm curious now that I think about that, how much of that comes into role play. Because as DM, certainly I do a lot of things with my voice, with how I'm speaking, and like maybe I'm going to do an accent or a funny voice. Maybe I'm thinking of a specific character to try and emulate them. But how much am I doing with body language? Probably not as much as I should, now that I think about it. I should do more with body language when I'm DMing, Dan. Why have I never thought of this?
That's one of my tips, right? So there's tip number one. We like to do you know, some of us, not everybody, likes to do funny languages or accents or things like that, voice work. But yeah, you should also consider you know, body language work. Now, admittedly, you know, if we're playing at a table, we are a little bit constrained about being in a seat. I don't know if you're aware about this, Paul. It can sometimes be uncomfortable or constraining to be in a particular position in a particular chair where you can't easily get up, possibly with technical equipment or papers around you, you know, but you can still use your, you know, you can be aware of what's around you and be safe, but, you know, you can do little things. I will say that I think probably as you're aware, Paul, as DM, for quite a long time, I actually do always stand up when I'm running games. So I sometimes get there and people are like, here's your chair. I go, I don't use a chair. Get that the fuck out of the way. Because I actually do want the full space specifically so that I can do body action work and also move around the table and actually possibly get some FaceTime with individual players if I need to. You should definitely think about body work, you know, given that it might be a limiting factor that you're actually seated at a table.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I like to do in my horror games, as you've seen, Dan, is usually along with pre-generated characters with specific backgrounds that I'm handing out, I also give each character usually a single physical prop. And that prop isn't important to the gameplay in any way. It's just a characterization, just something that, like, I feel like this character would have this object. And I find giving players an object to play with, you know, just to handle while they're portraying their character is actually super helpful. And so you can't always do this, right? I mean, it works easier for me in horror games where there's more story and more character pre-generated, whereas maybe like adventure games like D&D are a little more improvisational, so maybe it's a little harder to have physical props. But you can still do object work, right? You can still mime having physical objects in your hands, and that's, yeah. In fact, maybe I'll take this moment to plug, you know, since largely I would say DMing is largely improvisational and it uses things like voice work, object work, etc. Let me plug Karen 12's book. Right, we had Karen 12's on this very show not that long ago, who wrote a book. Dan, whose title I'm already forgetting, but it's something very obvious.
I think it's Improv for Gamers, like, right? It's pretty much what it says on the tin. I think it's Improv for Gamers, if I recall correctly.
Definitely recommend that. It's you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there, including notes on object work and such. You know, it's worth a read. Check it out.
And I will say, on the subject of, you know, have we studied or taken classes, I have fairly recently taken two semesters of improv courses here in New York with Barrow Group, which is the among the smallest amount of improv study of anybody that I know in my close circle of friends. So I'm clearly below average on amount of improv study and practice of among the people that I personally closely know and game with here. And the interesting experience was that I had Karen Twelve's book and was kind of prepping for her appearance on the show. And so I was reading a couple chapters, and generally speaking, chapter one was actually kind of like the first class, the first week's class. And then I'd read chapter two, and that was actually basically the second class. So you can do a pretty darn good job with getting Karen Twelve's book. And it to a large degree tracks a professional improv course that you would take in New York City, frankly. And I was delighted at the amount of overlap and the amount of advanced prep that it just kind of, I accidentally got due to this show, actually. And I kind of had a really big head start in that class, actually. So it's a great resource.
It's amazing. It's great. Yeah. Let's talk, Dan, about, because I feel like this is the you know, 800-pound gorilla in the room. Let's talk about funny voices, right? I feel like the number one thing I get asked when I talk about D&D and being in D&D, especially people who don't do it a lot, let's say, people who've played a little bit but not a lot, is the first thing they ask is, do you do funny voices? You do funny voices, Dan, when you DM?
I think yes, I believe. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure the answer is yes.
Now, do you have to do funny voices to be a good DM?
Okay, the answer is probably no, right? And I will let me throw up a comment that William had here just as we started. I feel like acting in D&D is kind of like miniatures, can be a fun part of the hobby game, not necessarily a requirement. And I think William is correct about that, of course. We know players, right, that we play with, Paul, that are intimidated, don't enjoy that, don't enjoy the voice work, don't enjoy the in-character speaking. Yeah. And, you know, we don't force it. I'm never going to force it on a player at all. Hopefully it's, you know, there's an invitation to do what you like. To be DM, you don't need to do that. I personally enjoy it. If your interests lie someplace else, you know, don't make yourself unhappy about it.
You know, that's a fascinating point. I mean, I enjoy it as well. But, and so I think our conversation is going to be biased in that direction. But I do want to basically completely agree with you here that it's not necessary. Like, one of the things I feel like I see new players to role playing kind of struggle with the most is, should I talk in the first or third person? Right? That's usually a surprising thing to them of, oh, everyone's talking in the first person. Am I supposed to talk that way? And then they maybe waffle back and forth a little between the little third person and first person about their character. And frankly, I would say either's fine. Either is really fine. I would never require any player to use either. If you want to talk about your character in third person throughout the entire game, fine, do it. I think that's totally great.
It's so many things that I learned, you know, actually getting ready for the show. And one of the things that I just learned in the history of acting, I did not know this, is that the word thespian comes from the first known actor who was named Thespis in ancient Greece and Athens. And apparently he did something really revolutionary, is that up until that point, every drama was narrated third person by the Greek chorus. And apparently Thespis came out on stage someday, and instead of saying, Dionysus did this, Dionysus did that, he said, I am Dionysus, and I am doing this. And it was revolutionary. It was revolutionary. Nobody knew that you could do that in first person. And there was rioting in the streets. And that's why, that's where we get the word thespian from, is the first person who had the idea of actually, you know, doing the completely crazy idea of pretending to actually be the person he's talking about. Right.
Wow. Wild.
So you can do it either way, right? And we have plenty of people at our tables that are always speaking third person. I do enjoy first person, but I, you know, of course, I've had times in Anade in the chat is saying, "What a dirty liar!" And I agree with that too. Good point. And you know, can't trust those stage performers, really.
Oh god, you know, I'm immediately reminded of the movie Galaxy Quest, you know, where a group of aliens don't understand the concept of acting, and Tim Allen playing a character who is basically, you know, kind of William Shatner, essentially, who is a TV actor in a sci-fi show, who they assume is a real starship captain, has to explain to them, "No, I'm an actor," and has to explain to them what that means. And like, it boils down to, oh, you say the thing that's not true. You lie. You lie. Yeah, that's what I do. I'm a professional liar.
Okay, so this gets made up, Paul, because a fairly short time ago, I heard this story from someone that worked on Galaxy Quest. And I didn't hear it in person. They were being interviewed, yeah. Right? And the remind me the name of the English actor that plays the alien. Somebody, he's in Die Hard, right? What is my problem here?
Alan Rickman.
Yes, right? Yes. Okay. Yes. So apparently they were working on a scene on the set, right, with Tim Allen and Alan Rickman, right? And they work on something, and Tim Allen turns to the director. His name escapes me at the moment, and says, "I'm sorry, I need to take a break. I need to go to a trailer for my while." He's very emotional. He's very emotional and clearly upset about what's happening. He's saying, I need to take a break. And he wanders off to his trailer, and the director says, "What the heck just happened with that?" And Rickman says, "I think he just experienced acting for the first time."
Yeah. I understand, you know, there's actually a great documentary, I think, circulating right now about the creation of that movie. Okay. And there was a lot of interplay between those two, because Tim Allen was, his background was comedy, right? He was a stand-up comic. And so he's just fucking around, right? He's just playing. And Alan Rickman was a serious actor, right? He had like a Shakespearean acting background. So there was a little bit of friction there. Yeah, you're probably going to experience that at the gaming table, friends, right? You're going to have somebody at the table who is a serious actor who wants to really role play their character, and you're going to have someone who wants to just
sit
and joke and have a good time.
Yeah. Paul, if you're DM and you see two players that are having friction on exactly that point, if one player says, "You got to talk to me in first person, right? I am here," and another person is like, finds that awkward, how do you manage that as DM?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, that is tough, I think, because, you know, I would say, let's see, if I was present enough to realize that's happening and was gonna like step in, because I feel like usually I'm juggling 16 other things as DM. So if I actually had a moment to be like, "Wait, let's address this issue," I would take a step back and have a little bit of this conversation you and I are having right now. I would say, "Hey guys, look, you know, this is, you know, part of the game. Some of us really want that immersive quality where we feel like we are our character and we're going to really dig into the acting. And some of us want a little more separation and want a little more, you know, humor and tone, humorous tone to what's going on, and are maybe uncomfortable being with that immersive. So let's talk about it a little bit and set the expectations before we move on." If I had the presence of mind to actually like have that speech ready right then and there, geez, I don't know. I feel like
that's a pretty good piece of improv right there, Paul. It was a pretty good improvised speech right there. You know, that's probably better than I would do. I'd probably start, you know, assessing in-game penalties like lightning bolts to the head and things like that, which never goes well. So I think it's better, really.
But I do think, you know, it's an interesting thing, because as we're having this conversation, I'm realizing, even though I have these ideas, I feel like I've rarely articulated them out loud at the table, and I probably should, right? Like, if I'm playing with a brand new player, maybe it's worth having a conversation and saying, like, "Hey, some people are going to talk in the first person, and that's normal, and it's not required. I don't require it. Like, if you would rather, you know, speak like the author rather than like the character, that's fine. But a lot of people like the immersive quality and want to jump into character." And I do. And me as DM, you're going to see me do it. So yes. I'm going to probably do some silly voices. I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to pretend to be these different characters and interact with you as if I am that character. And, you know, however you want to interact with me is fine.
I guess I usually lead by example myself, as I usually, you know, break into characters as and sort of like invite to the table. If you want to join in on that, that's fine. Admittedly, I'd never to date have these explicit session zero type conversations. But I've had people that have, you know, known me in other venues, or they know me as, you know, my partner's boyfriend, and like, oh, he's that, you know, he teaches math and does computing and stuff like that. And they come over and like, oh, I'm going to introduce you to D&D and, you know, enter the dungeon, and a gnoll comes out, and they're like,
what is Dan doing?
Right. There's just like an, all of a sudden I'm in a different character, and they're like, we did not know that was on the table. I tend to try to invite by example.
Okay, I want to get back into the funny voices discussion. So, assuming you like it, you want to do it, right? What advice do you give to the DM who says, "I've never done that. I admire it. I want to do it. How do I do it?"
Okay, so a little bit of practice beforehand goes a long way. I tend to overprepare everything, but I think in this, you know, in this case, a little bit of practice, if you're not used to do that, does quite a bit. Fine, you know, do a little bit of vocal practice beforehand on your own, and see like how low your voice goes and how high your voice goes, and make it comfortable, and you know, make it, you know, just work, you know, if you've never done it before, just work up one new character. Right, for the next game, and see how that goes. And you know, keep it easy. Pick something that's not in your normal, you know, your normal vocal register. And I think that there's a number of tricks or tips that we could talk about. And just, you know, just work up one and have fun with it.
Nice. Is there like, if you were going to start and you were going to pick one character, what are we talking about? Like, are you going to pick a major NPC in the plot of the game? Are you just going to practice, like, here's what goblins sound like?
Oh, what a great question. Okay, so if I'm talking from old school D&D, I actually would work up what goblins sound like, what small creatures. And so I actually do practice this, for what it's worth, is I do, and I don't know how well I do, but I actually do practice what a small creature sounds like versus a large creature versus a gigantic creature. And I do actually work on high register stuff for goblin. I'm a goblin, and I'm a kobold, and I'm a gnome, and I'm something else like this, that I can kind of pick if, and again, I'm running old school D&D. A lot of it's based on these random tables. I don't know what's going to show up from day to day. So if I can have a grab bag of, you know, some kind of thing that I can go into when a tiny goblin type creature shows up, that gets me a lot of traction. I get to reuse that a whole lot. And then when I have ogres or giants or something like that show up, then I can practice my lower register. Ah, you have intruded upon the realm of the giants. Throw down your weapons and surrender to us. And I can have this repertoire and get quite a lot of coverage of the stuff that tends to show up in D&D. So I think that if you did do that, you would potentially get lots of traction out of it. How would you go with that?
Yeah. I would say, well, I do exactly what you're saying in terms of the creatures, which is, you would get more mileage out of that, right? Especially if you're playing old school D&D where you're rolling on charts, or you never know what kind of creature is going to show up. Yeah. So being able to like quip little things about how the goblins are behaving and do a quick one liner is great. And it's probably more bang for your buck. Frankly, it's not what I do though. More often I'm focused on the major NPCs, the quest givers, the villains, what have you. And my big piece of advice is steal. Watch movies. Listen to audiobooks where the narrator does voices, you know, find ones you like. And you know, I've even done this actually just in my notes. When I have a major NPC, I write down what actor or fictional character they sound like. Right? And so, and then if I can like maybe write down a quote from a movie or a book or something, a one liner that I can say in their voice, that often will kickstart me into that accent or that voice or whatnot. Right. So maybe you have a dwarven king and you want him to sound like Rhys Davies, or maybe you want him to sound like Mike Myers doing Shrek. I don't know. Right. These are kind of classic voices. I've done this a lot, frankly, in the car. This used to be a big thing for me when I was like commuting a lot. I would be listening to an audiobook. I would hear an actor do a voice for a character and something would connect. I would go, oh, that's perfect for this NPC in this D&D game. And I would hit pause and then I would just start saying things in that voice as that character, as that NPC over and over again, just in the car. Like, it's nice to do it in a safe space where you don't feel like you're being observed, right? So you can, maybe you look like a crazy person parked in the parking lot talking to yourself, but, at least, maybe it's a little safer and you feel like less like you're on the spot and you can practice some of that stuff.
Totally. Great advice, right? Such a great, I thought that I was going to be disappointed if you didn't say that in this hour, Paul. And among the things of take a known character or actor from a known property is that we as hobbyists, right, have maybe an advantage or an additional trick in our toolkit, as opposed to someone like, someone who's a more high profile performer, someone's performing in public. They probably don't want to just duplicate a known character, right? That would be considered derivative. So they have to come up with fresh, new whatevers. Whereas, for playing with our close friends, we can pull up a character and just kind of resemble that. And in addition to a known voice or something we can recognize, it also carries all this information about what this character is like. And we know what they so-and-so did, what Yoda did in Star Wars, and that he was the mentor and stuff like that. And we can kind of suggest a whole background and a whole history very, very quickly by kind of echoing some known character that we love and adore and we all know. And that's actually a trick that probably a known actor would probably not be willing to do. So we have some additional resources if you're willing to totally steal like that, which we should be.
And I would even go so far. I would say too, like one of the things, if you do this, one of the things you might notice is, your players might find it funny, right? You might be trying to like do a serious voice for a major NPC and the character, and the players immediately recognize whose voice you're doing, and then they think it's funny. In which case, I would say that's fine. Lean in. Right, your players are engaged. Yep. Right, they're engaged and they're part of it. So lean into it. I mean, and it's not like, Joe Manganiello does this. I've seen him do this. Right, I've watched Joe Manganiello introduce a character named what was it? Somebody had a pet. I think was it a chicken or some kind of bird. That was a familiar, and they cast Speak with Animals so they could talk with it, and he decided that the character's name was Christopher Squawkin, and so immediately did a Christopher Walken impression right there on the table. An excellent, like really good impression. Really? And it's delightful. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube or whatever. Christopher Squawkin. Why not?
Wow.
It could be funny and good, right? Like, go for it.
Wow. I thought, a great piece of advice I think I heard like about 20 years ago is you can't plan on the comedy in D&D or role-playing games. You can, it kind of works better to actually like write and prepare like it's going to be serious. Don't try to pre-script the comedy because the players are going to find it on their own while they play. And when that vein shows up, lean into that, dig into that, that's fine. And so being really flexible and willing to recognize that, I think, is like a real treasure.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Now, let me touch back on something else you said there, Paul, about possibly using like a known character, new actors. You said, I write down maybe a name of an actor and one line. And that was also going to be one of my top tips, is that pre-script for me. And you know what? This works for so many things in my life. This works for the very first thing I say when I walk into a new class, which I'm going to be doing this week for the spring semester, for what it's worth, on a phone call, on a presentation before a committee. Okay, little behind the scenes secret, this show, right? I do actually pre-write one line, not a paragraph, not two sentences. I pre-write one single sentence, and I kind of craft that carefully to sound the way that I want, and maybe practice it once. And I find that if I can step into a situation and just have the first line be clear and coherent and well delivered, that just lubricates the whole, however long I have to go improvisationally, and I'm basically into the scene at that point. So for character voice work, again, one single key catchphrase can get you so much mileage. And I think this is a standard acting tip. One single key phrase to get you into that character. And if it has particular accent or voice, right, that sentence needs to have the key sounds that you're interested in. And I have gotten quite a lot of miles, like many of us have, of one key phrase that gets you into the voice of that character, and then the rest of it kind of flows. And I do that for a number of particular voices that I do, and just write one, right? Not a whole bunch of box text, but just one sentence in, and maybe the last sentence possibly is what I do for some things. And that helps so much.
It really doesn't have to be a lot. I'll give you a very obscure example of this, but I had a character or an NPC who was meant to be kind of a somewhat distracted, maybe oblivious, older British nobility type gentleman. And so I went back to, you're going to absolutely laugh at this one, but I went back to the 1995 BBC miniseries Pride and Prejudice. There's an actor named Christopher Benjamin who played Sir William Lucas. Not a big part. I visualize him. I can see him in my head. And literally the line I've written down is simply what, but spelt W-U-T, what. And then I can immediately get right into him by saying what.
Capital, great. Capital,
right? And then it's just great. I'm just there. All I need is what.
I say, I've no problem at all speaking like him now.
It's very great. I think a lot about the physicality of it too. I realize as I'm doing that, like I try to loosen my lip. I feel very jowly, and
I don't know what you're talking about. But I just kind of loosen up my lip, and I just let him kind of roll right out.
Great,
there he is. I don't know. Great, I can do him in an instant like that.
Great. Great. It's not going to get any better than that. It's not going to get any better than literally six characters on the page, right? to get into that voice. That's freaking genius.
Intentionally misspelled just to evoke that specific accent.
Yeah. For me, so I try, and I'm not good at any of this stuff, frankly, but occasionally, you know, I try to use like an Irish accent or something like that. And I generally don't do very well at it, which is weird because that's actually my ancestry. And I find that so traditionally, like when I intentionally try to do it, I actually do a bad job. And then I go home and I visit my folks for like 3 days, and I come back and I'm accidentally doing it. Right. I'm kind of accidentally have an Irish American accent, weirdly. But for me, the thing that gets me as close as anything is the line, "Ah, 'twas 20 years ago the last time I was in Dublin, lad." And that has, you know, the rounded vowels and kind of gets me in the right place, more or less. And then I'm kind of in a recognizable Irish accent. And I was, you know, doing one the other day, and I was told, "Well, that's better than you usually do. That's pretty good, actually." But what? That's just gold.
What? And here's the thing. You mentioned not being good at it. I would say this: it's more important to be consistent than good. As long as the character always sounds like the character, it doesn't matter if it's a terrible accent. Just do it, and players will get into it, and they'll just recognize it as you make that voice. And then you can do some fun little DMing tricks, right? Like you can have that voice come from behind a door or around the corner, and the players know who it is without you telling them, and it's delightful, right?
Great. That's the best. Great. Brilliant. Great. Now, you know, in addition to getting inspiration, right? And Josh had the point here in chat said impressions might be more intimidating for some folks than just making your voice sound different. Great. Okay. So instead of trying to appeal to a super well-known character, right? You can just lift stuff from people around you, right? So family members that your friends do or do not know that have interesting takes or interesting diction or things like that. If you're traveling in public, like here in New York, I'm on the bus, I'm on the train, and you know, so it's easier before everybody was on the phone all the time. But you hear someone talking on the phone that's interesting, right? Maybe jot down some notes about that, and your players won't know. Your players don't know who this person or where this comes from or anything like that. So if you just get some kind of inspiration or just some kind of idea of something you could do, right, you know, jot a couple notes about that down and steal that. That's what actual real professional actors totally do that, right? I remember hearing one of the leads of Modern Family saying, I'm just doing my aunt. I'm just, or my mother, right? I'm just doing my mother. That's it.
Yeah,
just came in, did my mother, got me the role. That's it. So that's a thing you can do, and you're not challenged by I'm doing a really good Christopher Walken or something like that.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be a recognizable actor at all, and it can be, like you said, like word choice. Just word choice can be as good as an accent, right? So like if you're not someone who swears a lot, make an NPC who does. Right? It's gonna be as easy as that. Or just giving that as an example, right? Like if the players walk in, you know, on the mercenary captain and he says, you know, oh, it's you fucking assholes again. What the fuck do you want? Get the hell out of my office, you bastards, right? Like, just no accent there, but just like, oh, okay, right? You know, for that matter, okay. Broken Dan. I'm going to keep going though. Other things, speed, right? Make a character who talks very slowly or very fast, right? That works too.
This is all correct. This all right, is Dan. Fucking Dan, gold,
make,
man.
Make an NPC, Dan, who doesn't swear, who's very careful and very...
I don't think I can do that.
Safe curses, right? Right? Who says, says, you know, flip instead of...
Fiddlesticks! I can't believe that happened to me again! Oh, wow! Oh, wow, the guest fell off the ship again. Oh, jeez. Tarnation. What are we going to do about that?
There you go. Yep. Word choice can make a big difference.
And most importantly,
write it down. I'm going to say it, you know, three times there for you. Write it down. So that you're consistent. Consistency is more important than being good.
Boy, you know, a couple of weeks back, you know, we had the conversation about things, you know, materials that were expected to play original D&D and the recommended equipment list. And now some of us have gotten to see the pre-publication draft, same list, right? That was not changed or modified or thrown out. That was well thought out and was a constant part of original D&D. I am so more committed to my binder, right? I'm so more committed to my DMing binder and having a place that I can jot down these one-off notes and having it be organized and expected in the, you know, in some loose leaf papers in the binders. And here's a page with some voices or notes or ideas for possible characters. And at some point, you know, I can just, before a session, I can just look at that and kind of hear some ideas for possible voices that might come up today. And yeah, I agree, Paul, write it down.
Yeah.
Totally. I will say that I've gotten some very interesting experiences lately around acting and performance here, and it is interesting being New York, and it's interesting my partner Isabel is pursuing acting pretty and she's very good at it, as I think folks know.
This is the fact I was expecting to come out when I asked you what your background
was.
Stan.
Okay.
That I was going to talk about Isabella practicing with her.
Well, there you go. There you go. So I have accidentally, and the funny thing is that I have such a head start with D&D, right? I have such a head start with the D&D. And so some people might know there's two or three websites that people use to make acting profiles and submit to calls here. And, you know, there's Backstage and there's Actors Access. I think there's one other. And so there's this continual flow, this continual constant flow where you're mostly auditioning, right? And it's a hard path because it's not like a job, you know, offer where it's like 50-50. It's like you do all these calls and you have a 5% chance of getting called back. And you need to have, you know, a lot of moral courage that you're auditioning and not getting a thing, auditioning and getting a thing, and really being zen with the overall process of auditioning being a large part of what your work is. And so I, you know, so nowadays, and this is new in the last couple of years, there'll be a call and then the next, like stage two is, here is one or two pages of script they call a side. Please tape yourself, right? Please record yourself in your home and send us this taped audition. And then stage three would possibly be pulled in for an in-person audition. And the sides will have, you know, they're not monologues. They usually have, you know, two characters interacting, but they might have three or four or five or something like that. So I'm in the interesting position, and there's different ways that actors do that, but I am really happy to cooperate and participate with Isabella. I tape basically all of her auditions with her. Or the vast majority, the ones that aren't monologues. So several times a week now, we pull out the camera and Isabel, we schedule, like when we're getting faster and faster at it to like a creepy degree. And I get a side that I've never seen before. And I wasn't part of picking it. And I don't know where the hell it was from. And frequently it's like, it's weird. Right. And so, I've got like 2 or 3 minutes to go before I have to do this. And I'm like, oh, you're my mother and I'm your adult daughter and we're naked in the bathtub. That's the scene. That was yesterday's audition, right? Like, okay. All right. And I'm, and you're losing your mind and I have to remind you to wash your parts. Okay. That's all right. Great. And this is actually going to be sent, right? It will actually be sent to a professional casting director and they're not really paying attention to what I'm doing, but I'm trying to give some energy to Isabel to be in the, you know, in the role or whatever it is. And the, and so the interesting thing is I have to, you know, you have to, and I think among the actors advice is just make a strong choice, right? Just make it, don't be lukewarm about it. Don't be vanilla about it. Pick something concrete and interesting and make a choice about it. And that's better than just being a limp rag with the lines. And so I'm in the interesting situation where I frequently have to play two or three or four or five characters in the scene. And they're talking to each other, right? And Isabel has a line, and then there's character A and B and A and C and D and A, and then Isabel has a line, right? And so I have to, you know, come up with obviously vocally distinct characters immediately. So I scan the side and I go, well, this guy's tough, so he's going to have a low voice. And this guy's very anxious, so he's going to have a higher voice. And they're kind of caricatures, right? They're kind of broadly, I'm not trying to be subtle about it. I just want it to be really obvious about who's who when there's multiple characters that I'm doing and I'm switching between them from line to line. And I find that really enjoyable. You know, occasionally Isabel be like, I'm sorry, you have to play three characters here. And I go, only three? Because I'm because from DMing D&D, I'm used to being like a dozen, right? I'm used to like, and you know me, Paul, like if I'm playing D&D and I have less, and I have less than two, you know, three characters, I'm generally kind of unhappy. And so the practice that I've had as a DM has really, you know, given me a lot of benefit of expecting to do a whole lot of voices back to back, making them distinct. And I get to have a surprising amount, even more practice than I used to here. And I get feedback about that. So if you're at all interested in, you know, and there are low impact background type acting jobs that are available. And if you have any interest at all at that at all, and you're in a place that supports that kind of work, you know, New York has a lot, LA has a lot, all kinds of other big cities have these kinds of jobs. Consider making a profile and, you know, getting some practice with the audition tapes is great practice. Mm. And I heard, you know, the great actor Philip Seymour Hoffman saying that when you go in for an audition, you got to see this as a job, right? You're getting acting practice because someone took the time to ask you for this. And if you're doing an in-person thing, they're paying money for an audition space. And you got to look at this. This is, you know, you're actually doing acting work and really take advantage of that kind of opportunity. So that's kind of interesting thing here. And we are frequently, you know, you want to do it in the car. That makes a lot of sense. We are now, we take walks to the park and we're running lines because we like to, we, you know, before we do a side, we actually do like to have it memorized. So we're just walking through the park and we're running lines and we're having a fake argument and people are walking by us. And people in New York don't take that much notice. They're used to crazy people and they're used to performers. So we just walk down and we have fake arguments or improvised scenes or see singing or something like that. And it's an interesting thing to get a little bit of a taste of once in a while. It's been very, very interesting couple of weeks here, the last little bit of it.
You know, another one more thing I will promote. I don't even know if this still exists, so I'm quickly looking it up as I promote it. But there was a project called LibriVox, which was specifically attempting to create audio recordings of audiobooks, for anything that was in the public domain. So, which is basically anything that predates 1930 or so. Yep, still exists, LibriVox.org. And I did this once. I sat down with a short story and I recorded myself reading it. And I ultimately submitted it to the project. But you know, if you don't even get to the submission process, whatever, who cares? But to sit there and read a short story out loud and record it is a fascinating experience. Give it a try. It's really interesting not only to practice different characters, because obviously dialogue will come up and you'll have to do their voices, but also, you know, as it gives you a little practice as narrator, right? Which is frankly the role that DM is most often playing is narrator. So, and it's very low impact, right? Cause you're just sitting there with the book and you're reading it out loud. Check that out. And then of course, you know, if you're looking for free audiobooks to listen to, also a good source.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. And likewise, with a little bit of taping auditions that we do here, I've been really pleasantly surprised by how many great lessons we've picked up lately about that kind of thing. That's great advice. You know, I guess that the other advice I hear is with both teaching and acting is, you know, record yourself, listen to yourself, right? And frankly, some people say that's painful. I find it so fascinating and such great, you know, great lessons that we get to take away. So you know, record yourself and listen to it. Hear what it sounds like. Yeah. You might rapidly be able to improve on some things.
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to sound different, right? Like your recorded voice sounds different than your voice sounds to you, just because, you know, I think it's something to do with like the way your own voice resonates within your skull that you actually hear it differently than everyone else. So it's definitely, don't take that badly. Yes, your voice is going to sound different, but you know, listen to it, see how it sounds.
Definitely. Can really help you out a lot. And I'll say this, right. If you're a professional actor, right. And you've done this for years and I've seen musicians in this kind of state, the amount of work you need to do to make the next step to make a visible improvement is immense, right? Immense. But if you're just beginning, right, the great news is all the easy fruit is right within reach, right? You can rapidly improve and you can rapidly expand your repertoire a lot, more so as a beginner than as an expert. So frankly, you have an easier path ahead of you making really interesting, significant improvements and additions to your game as a beginner than it will only get harder later on.
I mean, the good news is you're not doing this for a profession. It's a hobby with your friends. This is very low stakes. Like, I don't know, don't beat yourself up if your voice work isn't great. It doesn't have to be great.
Just make them laugh.
Very small touches, can really go very, very far.
Just find some way to make them laugh and be good with that. That's why we're here, ultimately.
Yeah. Absolutely. Dan, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts on acting for non-actors?
I do like the voice work. I do like being able to chat in first person my games, sometimes with myself, often with you, Paul, right? Just little tips, right? I do a little bit of vocal range practice from time to time offline. I do work up a couple of accents that I try to practice. And this idea of jotting down like one key entry line into it is great. Being able to use physical movement as well is really great. And I find it really enjoyable. If you can invite your players along with you, that's usually where the hardest laughter comes from.
Yeah.
Is when you're doing something in a completely completely outrageous accent.
The last thing I'll say is it doesn't have to be just for DMs, right? If you're a player and you want to make your character distinct, give them a distinct voice or give them distinct mannerisms or distinct word choices. Anything, any little change will make them memorable and interesting and fun to play. But certainly as a player, realize that you're committing to more because this is a character you're going to be with probably for a long time, right? And I'm reminded, frankly, of the second season of Critical Role where Sam Riegel comes out and he's playing a young female goblin character and comes out with this voice, this falsetto, whatever, blah, blah, blah voice, right? And immediately upon introducing the character and saying the first lines in it, he says, yes, this is its voice and I'm committing to this. And the rest of the season, he does that voice. So be prepared. If you're doing this as a player, the commitment is bigger.
Commit to the bit. Yeah. And, make sure that you can physically handle it, because I have certainly come in and I've done, for like maybe a big dragon or something like that, full on cookie monster. You're under my realm and how dare you, small things. And at the end of like a 4-hour session, be like completely hoarse. Yeah. Like, I really regret that choice.
Very, very easy if you add a lot of fry to your voice to really like blow it out over the course of a session. So be careful. Start with something easy. Just word choice is like the easiest one. Just come up with a couple phrases that your character likes to say. Say them a lot.
Love it. Love it.
Viewers, if you have any thoughts, any other ways to incorporate a little more acting into your role play, drop us a comment here in the YouTube comments section. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe it's a new idea that we hadn't thought of, or maybe it'll spin us in a whole new direction and give us a whole new topic for another episode down the line.
Yeah, and remember, you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, TikTok. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all of the sites. So please slay that like button.
If you prefer to listen to us in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also, there are various podcast carriers such as iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher. If you're listening to us right now on one of those third-party sites and they give you the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really, really do. And of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show and come up with great ideas like the one for this episode right here. And if you'd like to join them, like Paul said, the top of the hour, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And among other benefits for all of our tiers, you will get on our Discord server where the conversation's going all the time about acting and performance and D&D and horror and looking for games and miniature work and war games and all kinds of stuff. And we'll have our live after party chat in about 10 minutes or so. And we would love to see you there if you haven't been there before. And or if you had, we'll also love to see you there if you have been there before, because that's a great part of our week all the time. Paul, we had a pretty good time on the Thursday miniature show, because I actually was casting
my first ever player characters out of lead molten on my stovetop for the first time ever live Thursday night. And I really didn't know what was going to happen. So we kind of had me and all the viewers were like, I don't know what's happening now, but here's getting just slightly splashed by molten metal. I don't know how bad it got. Now I don't remember. I don't remember how bad it got. I know there was cold water being thrown on me at some point. So, maybe check that out from Thursday. We'll be back with more of Dan's old time mini show, Thursday at 9 PM, possibly making space monkeys this time, perhaps, or maybe some painting. I don't know, something like that. So we would love to see that Thursday.
Fantastic.
Night.
Yeah. I haven't seen those episodes yet myself, so I'll have to go check them out.
Watch the one from Thursday because I was trying to pull out snapshots, frankly, and then I got sucked back into watching it myself. It was sufficiently high tension that I actually got sucked back into watching my own show 2 days later.
Amazing.
So please don't forget, of course, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.